Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Listeners, this is Maxine Marcellini. I'm so glad you've joined us. My co-host Jeannie is not with me at the moment and maybe won't be on the show today. So we will wish her well and pray she's doing well in whatever the day has in store for her. I know she's had a little bit of difficulty, so do pray for her. Over the last few days, she's ended up in the hospital even. So we lift Jeannie in prayer and ask the Lord to cover her with his healing balm and restoration of her physical health. So, but listeners, today we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest for you. We have spoken with David OG1 Jackson once in the past, and now we are having him back because he's a man who is respected in business. He's a speaker, an author, an activist. He's known to the entertainment world as DJ OG1, who currently holds residency at the Moda Center, which is the official site of the Portland Trailblazers, which I've got the season tickets to those games too, and I enjoy watching OG up there on the DJ platform. His clients have ranged from the Obama administration, Michael Jordan, Jay-Z, P. Diddy, and corporate clients such as Nike, Adidas, Toyota, and many more. He's lived through a very complicated childhood and somehow survived. In fact, his family of origin became headline news. David knows firsthand what it's like to be parented wrong. And now as a father himself, he wants to share with others the significance of nurturing children in positive ways. And we're going to be talking right now and welcoming David OG1 Jackson, the man behind the music. Welcome to the show today, David.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Well, any time a guy's got a lot of good stuff to say about it, fatherhood, I'm willing to listen, and I know the audience is too. We've got so many people who struggle to know if they're doing it right and maybe don't know how to do it right because they were parented wrong as well and haven't caught up with how to maybe bring in some very positive features into their own parenting style. So let's start out because Father Day is very close at hand. It's next weekend. What was your relationship with your own father?
Well, growing up, my mom and dad divorced when I was really young. I think I was around 5 or 6 years old when they divorced. So, and immediately my mom left Virginia, the East Coast, and we moved to Los Angeles. So there was automatically a separation right there from my father, and so it was a struggle because I was in between those two relationships. And so I didn't really get a chance to bond with my father like I would have liked to just because of the nature of the conflict between them. So my relationship ended up being very strained. My perception of him was very tainted from my mother's perception of who he was, and so, you know, I grew up, you know, having, you know, her perception of him in my mind, even though that wasn't necessarily my reality. So not a really close relationship with my father, not due to anything that he had done towards me personally, but just because of the separation from my parents.
Was he a good father?
Well,
you
know,
I didn't.
My experiences with him were great. The times that I got a chance to spend with him, he was a military guy. And so whenever I got a chance to visit my grandmother on the East Coast, you know, and connect with him, the moments I had with him were great. I never seen anything negative about him. But the reality was, you know, I would have to go back home to my mom. And so times where he would be on the phone with me whenever he was able to find out where we were, if you can picture in your mind a kid having a telephone in his ear, and on one hand he's hearing his father's voice, and then right on the other side he's hearing his mother say, "Don't believe a thing he's saying. He's lying. He's not telling you the truth." So,
well, that's what we call parent alienation, when there's the deliberate intent of one parent to cause an alienation factor in the child's mind with the other parent. Apart from a very good reason behind that, it's kind of it's cruel to the children.
Right. And so that was my experience with my father. And as I grew older to become a teenager and he wasn't around, and, you know, you have things at school like father and son night. I would have to go and rent a dad. You know, my friend's father would take me. And so as I start having those experiences, you know, I would have thoughts of, well, if my dad really wanted me, if he really wanted to be there for me, he would do whatever he necessary to do that. And that wasn't, you know, I didn't see that. So it just started building resentment, you know, for that as I got older. And it wasn't until he was on his dying bed that I got a chance to, you know, kind of really have some candid conversations with him and really get a whole different perspective of what it was like for him as a man not to be there for me. Which changed my whole perception and just made me look at just, you know, the institution of fatherhood just on a whole different level.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because that's the message we want to bring forward today. We want to talk about why fatherhood is so important and what is the biggest challenge you think fathers face today, OJ. OJ.
Yes. So one of the biggest things I think men who, you know, are in father positions is one of the biggest things is battling our self-value. Because if you look at our society, the way society is built, it doesn't really exalt fathers, you know, in a positive way. If you look at most of the time, it's talking about mothers, and I think mothers are great and amazing. They're pillars of our community. They're backbones in marriages. I can tell you, being married 25 years, I mean, you know, my wife, you know, is a pillar. But with that said, though, when you talk about raising young boys and young men, you think, well, what do they have in front of them, and what is being promoted as what a father is? What is a positive image of a father when you don't see that promoted anywhere?
So, David, you are an advocate for community action and things of that nature. You've worked with a lot of kids and tried to help them make positive choices. You're doing an excellent job. So what are the challenges today that these kids are facing, and what can a father do to direct their path?
Again, it comes back down to value. You know, we would hope that, you know, the foundation of our values are being established in family, but the reality is that most families, particularly ones I've dealt with, are dysfunctional. In terms of structure, having a father and mother in the home, most of the time women are having to raise, and grandmothers are having to raise, particularly young men. And so, again, when you look at, okay, a mirror as a young man, what am I looking towards in terms of here's the bar that's set for a man? If I don't even have that in front of me, how do I gauge whether or not I'm doing the right things as a young man? And if I'm not having any input from a male figure that is promoted, that, you know, as positive, I can trust. If I'm at home and all I hear from my mother is, you know, you can't really depend on your father, or you can't be trusted, or men can't be trusted, or I don't see any male stature being promoted in any kind of positive light unless they're extreme, like President Obama or an athlete or, you know, the rapper, you know. But I don't see a day-to-day, hands-on, responsible man that's being promoted in front of me. Then how do I know if I'm going in the right direction? And how do I even identify what my true value is? And so one of the things that I try to do, other than just being an example, just being actively involved, one of the things that I help with at Jefferson High School here in Portland is we call the Boys to Men group, where we just get men. We just get men, fathers, people from different backgrounds, just together, just to have breakfast with the boys, not to come and preach to them or anything, but just getting young men used to being engaged with grown adult fathers. Just because, not any agenda.
I like that concept.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, just
that's,
being
that's
just
very,
being in relationships.
Active. That's active.
Yes.
Okay, so how do you choose the men that get involved?
Well, it's based on, you know, men wanting to be involved. We don't necessarily
just
choose.
Kind of volunteer
we step
forward.
Exactly. We set this bar and standard in terms of if you're going to be involved, it needs to be a commitment, because our young men are used to having men going in and out of their lives. So if you're going to come and get involved, there needs to be a commitment that you're going to, you know, you're going to take the long trip with us. It's not going to be just a feel-good moment. Hey, I come once and then, you know, get feel-good moment, and then the kid will never see me again.
So David, do they get their startups out of church, out of men's groups and churches? How do we start a group like that?
You just start it.
Okay, but you wouldn't just do it in your neighborhood. You'd do it from a church setting where, you know, maybe faith would be important too?
Oh, yeah. See, I mean, because in our groups, we have men from all different backgrounds. We have pastors all the way to police officers, men that are involved in. And I think one of the misconceptions is that you have to have this big movement to get something started, and it doesn't. It just takes someone that says, I'm just going to do it, and then I'm going to talk to other men and include them in it. It doesn't take a lot of money. It's not a money-making, or it's not even under an organization, you know, or anything. It's just, hey, just like we have barbecue gatherings, you know, with friends and family, we just do it around boys. We just say, hey, we're going to get together.
So
we're going to get the boys
group is, so the group is called Boys to Men?
Boys
Have
to
I got
Men,
that correct?
Yes.
Okay, I like that, because they are developing and we want them to grow into men of strong character. How do we get the women in our lives, the moms, to get behind this concept?
Well, I think, one, it is a changing of mind and understanding that, you know, even though, you know, I grew up with a single parent, and, you know, there's no handbook. There's no handbook to parenting. We usually try to do the best that we can with what we have, you know, and knowledge and maturity we have. And I think a lot of times mothers are in those positions, you know, trying to raise kids. And I think just understanding that it's bigger than them, and that particularly when it comes to raising children, this goes to boys or girls, because I feel like, you know, men should raise men, but when you're in those situations as a mother where you don't have that element there, I think it's important to find someone who represents the type of man that or father figure that you would want in your son or daughter's life.
Yeah.
as opposed to totally subtracting it from it.
Yeah. When much younger, years ago, I was divorced with two young children and trying to do the mother and father thing myself for a while.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it was important that there were still some role models around that Mike could look up to. And so part of what I did with him was let him be involved with some of the YMCA camp things and the youth groups at church that had strong male leadership, because he needed to see people who could set that bar for him. And I, as a mom, couldn't do it all. I knew I couldn't do it all. But I wanted him to have those role models before him. So you're hitting on something that's incredibly important. So, David, Pardon me?
I say, even as it relates to, you know, I know we're talking about boys, but even as it relates to daughters, because you think our daughters marry their fathers or whoever represents that father, that strong father figure, good or bad, they marry them. And so if you are not promoting what it is, you know, what that image and character of a strong man is, even in your daughter's life, even if you don't have a husband or a father figure in your home, if you don't find that outside, and that doesn't mean that a woman has to go and have a relationship with that person.
Right.
It's not about that. It's about identifying the institution of what is a good man, a good father figure. So even your daughters know what that looks like and feel good that they don't have to say, okay, well, I can't ever trust a man because my mother didn't trust a man. You don't want to pass those kind of things on to our children, if that makes sense.
Well, I know you made mention here in the material you sent me about the difference between the relationship of the father and son versus a father and daughter. They're both very important. And the main difference in your mind is what?
The main difference is that, you know, I truly believe that a woman can teach a young girl things that a man can't teach. But there's things that a man can teach from a male's perspective that a woman can't teach as well in both situations. And I think it's to have that balance is very crucial. One is not more important than the other. I think both are equally as important. But again, I think a lot of times what's promoted in our society is that, you know, this whole idea, I don't need anybody. I don't need a man in my life to help raise, and, you know, and vice versa. And I think that's a terrible spirit to promote with our young people.
Yeah, I totally
agree.
I think family values are being very undermined today with the television and the movie productions and things.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't, for the most part, not adding respect to family relationships that need to be nurtured. They're more making fun of them or putting down the man in a lot of cases. And yeah, it's not what it ought to be. What might be a list of three characteristics that most fathers should possess to be effective with their children?
Well, I think, you know, honesty is one. You know, I think with your children understanding that it's not about being perfect, it's about being accountable, though.
Yeah.
It's about being accountable, having integrity, because your integrity and your honesty is going to be the things in which you make decisions by. And so I think honesty, integrity, of course, with me personally, God is definitely at the foundation of my household. And my children understand that whether they choose to believe in God or not, you know, that's something that they have to decide on their own. I don't force that on them, but they understand that that is at the foundation of my household, and that's how I make decisions and how I deal with them, how I deal with, you know, the work that I do. And I think kids seeing those type of things modeled in front of them, because I think that's another big thing. Whether you're, you know, man or woman, but fathers in particular, you know, your children need to see you, you know, model the type of behavior and character that you want them to follow.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yes, good idea. And the work ethic that's being produced today sometimes is very lacking. And I think fathers are often in a position to bring about a better work ethic than a mother can at times, because they're respected for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it's something that is not necessarily from a male standpoint is being because our kids, I mean, the reality, our young people are influenced by media. They're influenced by, you know, the things that are popular. And there used to be a time in our society where, you know, there was pride in being a responsible father. There was a sense of pride in that. But if you look at today, where is that being promoted? Even in media or anything, it's not. Now, mothers, on the other hand, you know, you hear a lot of things about mothers. And again, it's not to take away from that, because that is a reality. Women have been the backbone of our community. But if you are not equally promoting in the eyes of young people the value of, you know, the institution of man, much less of father, being a father, then how do they grow up and learn how to know that there's value in it?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it really just starts. And I think it starts in the church. I think it starts at home. I think we just have to start having more intentional conversations with our young people and in our household, in our circles of friends, that we purposely start bringing value back to fatherhood.
Well, I think you're right on track with that, David, because fathers are important. The children need that. They feel safe when they know a father is there to look after them, protect them, and love them unconditionally. And mothers do the same, but there's something a little bit different about a father's role. And I had a father who worked hard. I didn't have a super close relationship with him until maybe later in life, and I don't know if I'd ever call it like it was super close. We had a good relationship, but I wasn't, I wasn't the favorite child, let's put it that way. But I was closer to my mother than I was my father, but I never disliked my father, and he wasn't a mean person, but he wasn't real communicative either. So I would say that fathers who can talk with their children, that's another thing that they should be doing. Communication is powerful. How do you communicate with your children? What would you suggest a father do to open those lines of communication in a good way?
Well, yeah, with me, I'm very open and honest with my children. Very, very candid, you know, to the point of the level of maturity that they can understand. But I'm very open and honest. I have an open, you know, policy with my kids that my kids can talk to me about anything without judgment. I hold them accountable, but without judgment, you know, as if, you know, if they make a mistake that, you know, now I'm going to rain hell and fire and brimstone on their heads. No. I hold them accountable. I let them know the difference between right and wrong, and that, you know, when the consequences of decisions come, they have to own those as well. But always keeping honest and open communication with my kids. If I make a mistake as a parent, I'm equally going to them and owning that as well. And I've had conversations with my children and said, hey, you know, this decision that I might have thought was right was unwise, and I have to, just like I'm holding you accountable to yours, I have to hold myself accountable as well. And so your kids grow up to respect that, you know, about you. But you have to be, you know, open and not feel insecure about doing that.
Yeah, what is the danger when parents set boundaries but don't enforce boundaries?
Well, it teaches them value. It teaches them that, you know, your word is not your word. So, you know, you have children that grow up and feel like, okay, if my parents said something and they don't follow through on it, then, okay, well, what they were saying, that principle that they talked about must not be that important, or it must be built off of the emotion that they're in at that time. I mean, my parent is angry at that time, so they're going to lay the law. As soon as they're not angry, then that law doesn't, you know, exist anymore.
Well, David, would you tell our listeners a little bit about the man behind the music? Who were your male role models in childhood?
Well, unfortunately, gang members were my male role models. when
well,
I was younger,
a lot of people need
members,
to hear that, though.
Yeah, you know, gang members, drug dealers, those were my male role models. I had, at a young age, really bad experiences with males as it relates to in the church. Of course, father figures that were in my mom's life that tried to be fathers were, you know, it was not good situations. And so most of my upbringing when I was younger was heavily influenced by the streets.
Okay. How did you break out of it?
Well, how I broke out of it, I had a gentleman who was a pastor that's in my book, Elder Broussard, that kind of stepped into my life in a just kind of a non-religious type of way, though he was a pastor. But really kind of took me, kind of really stood up for me. He was the first male that wasn't related to street stuff that stood up for me and didn't have to. And so that was my initial draw to him, and just kind of treated me like I was his son, and really didn't have any reason why he had to do so. And so that was the very thing that got me away from the gangs and all those things. And he really got me active in sports and music, and really just kind of reintroduced me into, I guess, reconnected me with my relationship with God at that point. Because prior to that, I just kind of was like, forget it. If this was what God is about, you know, with people being hypocritical in church and things like that, I didn't want anything to do with God at that point. And so he was the person that reconnected me with that situation. Now, interesting enough, he would, you know, show you how God works and how he uses people regardless of what the end results might be. But that was the very situation in my book that ended up being a cult situation. And so, you know, talk about confusion. And, you know, in terms of a male perspective here, I had a pastor that, that introduced me, you know, back into a relationship with God and saved me from the street and turned around and things didn't work out too great with him. So I had to just get to the point where, you know, I had to say, okay, well, God, what is this? Now, you put these men, different men in different parts of my life for some reason to get me to some point. And I just had to get to the point where I had to say, okay, well, I need to stop looking for outside external situations to make me take value in who I am. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I had to really have a really candid discussion with God and say, okay, who am I supposed to be as a man? And regardless of my circumstances and situations, how do I want my sons and daughters to see me as a man? And let me not use the excuses of my experiences as a way to say, well, I have an excuse. I have a real excuse because life was really messed up for me. I have a real excuse as to why I can just go and screw everything up in life. But instead, I made the conscious decision that, no, Lord, I believe in you enough that you didn't allow me to go through all these things just because. And I often look at the story of Job. You look at Job and his experience. He was doing all the right things. And he was allowed to be touched a particular
yes.
way and go through things. Well, what was that purpose? What was the purpose of him having to go through all those things? I look at myself and I say, well, if God allowed him, Job, to go through that just to bring him on the back end of glory, who am I? Who am I to complain? You know?
You know,
and,
you
and
have,
so
you have hit on
down.
The right answer. Go to God. Don't keep thinking the external people in your world hold the answers to how you're going to move your life in the right direction. I had to come to that same conclusion. You let people have power over you, but you can choose to let God be triumphant in your life. And in fatherhood, I don't see any higher calling than to allow God to be first and then ask him, what can I do to bring value to my children, to bring value to our relationship as a father and son, father and daughter? What would you have me do? And God's got it. Got it written down for us in the good book there, as they say, in the Bible. We can find all the scriptures we want to raise our families properly. And one of the things, David, that you have done in your book, you have also brought out your mother. And, boy, is chapter 6 is so much a connection for me in the new book that I've written, Mother's Fury, that we're going to launch next week on the 23rd here in Portland, Oregon. And I can't believe you had such a struggle with your mother, and my applause to you for surviving the parenting that you had, because God has given you a spirit of survival, and somehow he's using all of those places you've been as a child to now help other children not be treated the same.
Right.
You're bringing value
to people. Yeah, people are amazed now because they see me and my mother now. Me and my mom are really close now. And one of the things that when I go and speak, you know, I talk about love, forgiveness, and choices. And I think oftentimes people that are in my position that have dealt with abuse or things like that, it's very hard to, you know, forgive. Mm-hmm. And it is very hard to find love within yourself, because you often think, well, what did I do to deserve that, you know, to deserve things? And so me and my mom had, you know, had to have some really candid discussions, and I had to, one, put myself in her place. She had me when she was 15 years old, and I think today, and I'm like, okay, what 15-year-old today do I know has mature parenting skills, you know, that are even just mature, and much less raising a young boy by herself with no help. And so I started thinking, just, you know, emotionally, the things she probably was going through, and I was just the outlet. I was the easy outlet. Now, that doesn't excuse the behavior, but it does bring a sense of understanding where, you know, I look at it and it wasn't an intentional. I don't believe my mom brought me in the world to say, I'm just going to make his life the worst thing ever. I don't believe that about any mother. I do think that mistakes and things are, decisions are made that are very unwise. And so me and her have had to have some discussions that dealt with accountability, the reality of things that she wasn't even consciously aware of, things that I was going through as a child. Me and my mother never had discussions, period, which is why I'm a big advocate for parents. Talk to your kids. Your kids know, and they know more than you think that they know. They see more than you realize. Even at 5 years old, I saw things my mother had no idea that I knew about. So having those discussions, and so being able to get to a point where I understood that I'm valuable as a person because God made me. Mm-hmm. And God doesn't make any mess.
No, he doesn't make mistakes or messes. Right?
Exactly. So I had to come to that for myself. And from there, you know, I had to say, okay, forgiveness was more for myself. I had to forgive myself for allowing myself to carry the burden of my mother's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
For years.
Wow.
And so once I came to that.
You had big shoulders, David.
Yeah.
Thank God the spirit of forgiveness entered in. We're really starting to run way out of time here today for the interview. But I would like to inspire listeners to get a hold of your book, The Man Behind the Music, The Life and Times of David William OG1 Jackson Jr. And it's written by Rochelle D. Rodizi Hart. And she's done an excellent job writing your story from the narrative you gave her. And it just really touches my heart every time I drag it back out and look at it afresh, because you're a man who has been through a lot as a child, come through it, survived the abuse, came to understand your abuser, and now are going forth to help other young children feel that they have the value that God wants them to know they own. So thank you so much. Where can people get a hold of you, David?
Well, they can find me at djspeaksnow.com from a speaking and community standpoint. Musically, djog1.com. I'm easily found. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, the whole social media. Not hard to find me.
Okay. Well, thank you for being our guest today. Do you have one last message, one sentence you'd like to tell fathers before Father's Day comes?
Just be involved. Just be involved. By any means necessary, you know, of course, you know, in a positive manner, but be involved. Your kids, you know, want your involvement, you know, and they want to see you fight. They want to see you fight for them.
Well, listeners, we've enjoyed talking with David Jackson today. Go out and find the book that tells more about him, The Man Behind the Music. You'll understand him more. But as he has said right now, be involved with your children. They need you. They want you. And they do more of picking up what you do before them. So be that example rather than just a do and don't kind of a dad. God bless you, David. We appreciated you being here with us today.
Thank you, and same to you.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.